Tour podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. Today, we are bringing you another SME interview, and therefore, I would like to welcome Kate. Hi, Kate. How are you doing?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing great. Thank you.
It's such a pleasure to have you here. And guys, if you like what you're hearing, what you're listening, what you're seeing, make sure to hit the like and subscribe button and leave us a very nice comment and share it as much as you can. That said, Kate, you are working with startups and with corporates and help them to cooperate. But let us first get a little bit into how you got to this position. You are also advising several startups we are interviewing or have been interviewing. But how did you get to this position? You don't start out and say, oh, I want to be an advisor to a startup. What happened there?
I wasn't born and said, okay, startups, that's my thing. No, I had a rather long and heavy career in commercial banking and really started with the whole bank training program, very heavy risk training, and moved through from the FI side, really correspondent banking, to the corporate side, and then really concentrated on transaction services, so cash, trade, securities. And innovation became more and more interesting to me, more and more my hobby, if you will. And by the time I got to my last bank, I worked for ING as the last stop, I got to do innovation as my job. So I was working on the wholesale side for innovation, and I was working with certain startups, and I got the bug, and I loved it. And as I got the opportunity 3 years ago, I made myself independent. I became a freelancer, working together very strongly with fintechs. I also advise banks and corporates, but it's always the theme is digitalization, it's innovation, and that's what I'm looking at for cash and trade.
We may add for everybody who's not really in banking that correspondence banking basically means you have a network. As a bank, you used to have a network with other banks, and that's basically how you made international transactions. And transaction services means everything related to trading for cash or like equity, stock exchange, stuff like this.
Well, it's to just be very clear on the transaction services side, although I did work on the security sales piece, it was primarily cash. When I say cash, I mean account opening. It's all the EB tools, it's liquidity management, it's cards, commercial card programs, etc. And on trade, it would be the plain vanilla, if you will, LCs, collections, but also all the supply chain finance and supplier finance tools.
And at what point did you decide, this corporate job isn't for me anymore, I much more enjoy startups? What triggered you there?
I think it was really, as I said, I think it was working with ING was a real pleasure, I must say. I mean, it was my fifth international bank. I have more than 30 years experience in commercial banking. The bug really bit me when I got to, I started out working with a third-party payments provider called Payconiq, which is strong in the Benelux. And one of my jobs was to really bring it to Germany and really get down and dirty as how that works. What would you do? The marketing, the strategy plan. It was the first time I had stand-up meetings. Ooh, that was really exciting. Different. I loved it. Fast, dynamic. And I saw myself a little bit as the bridge between what had happened, so the old world, to what was really happening, the new world, which I loved. And I was able to explain to people what this all meant and where it was going, because they had trouble. Either they were in the old camp or the new camp. And having done that, working also with another company called Cobase, which was also a spinoff from ING, I really decided that the whole strategy piece, working with fintechs and bringing my both transaction services knowledge and my coaching skills and my risk experience together in one was a really exciting possibility. And that's when I got the idea to start really advising and consulting. And I had the opportunity to go rogue, to go freelance, and I did it.
So you went freelance, and that's one of points we will be talking about today. Not necessarily how freelance working for startups is, but rather what you and maybe even I have learned from that, because today we want to talk about how startups could or should approach the cooperation with the corporate, because there is usually a lot of misunderstanding and even fear, maybe on both sides. The startups fear to be copied by the corporates, and the corporates fear to be outrun by the small and agile startups. How would you start? For example, I'm now founder, and I said, I think I need to cooperate with corporates. How would you start? Help me think about it.
It's a very good question. I think that if we go back in history a few years, there was a real fear even from the corporate side to work with a startup. Why? Because although there were laser focus possibilities in terms of solutions, the substance was, let's say, small. And the question was, would they survive? Are they really clever enough in terms of their, risk assessments? Do they do compliance well? Am I taking on something that isn't going to work? There was also the big question of the, I would call it even the language. Startups would speak in one way and have certain ideas, and corporates and banks, I'll put them both in the same category, would not. They didn't understand each other. It was as simple as that. They worked differently. There was legacy on one side and there was greenfield on the other. So there were a lot of barriers. But in the end of the day, it was absolutely key, and it is absolutely key that they collaborate, because that's the future in my mind. We no longer can have the one-stop shop where a corporate or a bank makes everything, does everything. They're going to need to work with the right kind of providers. And on one hand, if you look at PSD2 and open banking, how that's opened up the possibility for banks. And on the corporate side, I think there's a lot more confidence today to work with startups that have the right ideas, or maybe startups that become scale-ups. So, I mean, that's how I would start it, Joe.
That's already a good start. We may add from the start that PSD2 is the Payment Service Directive number 2, which forces banks to open up a little bit to startups. Of course, you can learn down more down here in the show notes what that actually means. And I think there have been libraries talked and written about PSD2 alone, and we won't get started here. Go down here in the show notes and you will be able to learn more. Okay, now I understood that as a startup founder, and how would I need to come up with a list of potential cooperation partners as corporates? Should I just look at my direct competitors, at companies who do something similar or kind of similar? How would you approach that?
Okay, well, the first question is, what does the corporate want? Is it a question, if we use perhaps, I work very closely with, no secret on my profile, with two fintechs, one in the cash world, one in the trade world. If I start perhaps with a trade example, and look at TraxPay, the product there is really a platform to allow companies, buyers who are selling. Or excuse me, suppliers who are selling to buyers, and those buyers want to help those suppliers by actually paying them early, but at a discount, of course. Really taking care of that is a huge process. There's a lot involved, and you really need a very sophisticated platform to make that happen in a good way, both in terms of risk and economies of scale and all the rest. So here you have, a fantastic platform, and how does that work from there? Well, in this particular case, working together with Traxbay, we've decided what kind of a company would actually fit the profile. So what kind of company would want that sort of service? Then we also work with banks in this case and say, what kind of banks or multipliers could we talk to that would also have corporate clients that would be interested in this kind of service? So it's on this particular case, or in this particular case, it's very much a need question. What corporates could use these services? In other words, they are quite international. There is a lot of complexity. They have suppliers that really could benefit by quicker, more liquid, more liquidity in their invoices. So that's actually not too difficult. The more difficult part is to really sort of reimagine the process, to explain to them that this can be done, and it can be done easily and quickly. Not only say it, but prove it. And to the banks to say, your corporate customers are no longer interested in monobank platforms. They want multibank platforms. So what you're doing now might be cool, but it's not cool for the future. You're going to have to work with a provider that will give your buyers what they want. That's one side. On the cash side, when I work with a company like TIS, there it's really a question of companies who they're looking for a provider who can really reduce complexity. If you think of, you know, the treasurer headache, oh my gosh, I have 2,000 ERP systems. I'm joking, but many ERP systems and iterations. I have really hundreds of banks in 50 different countries, maybe 2,000 accounts. I have a lot of people out there with different rights. It's spaghetti. It's worse than spaghetti. It's complex. And you're looking for someone to make that easy. Who could stand in the middle and fix that? And on top of that, give me yet more products and services through a platform. So again, there's, you know, the fintech has to say, who's out there that could really use my product? What makes sense? You know, and I help them look through that, and I help them also position that. And on the other side, to explain to corporates why that's so important and to show them the value. So those are some of the parameters I work with.
Basically, I would boil it down. I've been typing while you're reading to question one, what do corporates want? Question two, how do I fit in there? And question three, how do I get the right positioning there? Would that be fine for a first step?
Yeah, what a corporate want, I think what they're really looking for. They know what they want. In the case of TraxPay, corporates want to there's the view of the supplier and the buyer. The buyer would like to take their liquidity and probably use it more efficiently. The supplier would like to increase their liquidity when they need it. So that's what they want. What's your question number two again? Would you repeat that?
How does my startup fit in there?
And then from the corporate's point of view, they're going to be looking at any sort of startup or any sort of scale up that would fit exactly that need. How do they find them? Through people like me, who really know the market, who've done a market scan, who've talked to, who've worked with. My research, I spend 2-3 hours every day researching the market. I look at every provider. I look what every provider is doing in Europe or in the US in my area of expertise. I see how it's changing. So either, you know, you work through someone like me, maybe you would work through an advisor. So some of the consultancy services where, you know, I also contribute to. But it's not easy because there's so many interesting providers out there, and you need to know a little bit about their experience and their product, and you know, is the longevity really there? So that would be number two. And number three is?
The right positioning. That's the three questions that I got. How do you position yourself right for this first interaction with a corporate?
Fair enough. I think it's very, very key that you have, you know, I'm working with TIS, who's about to come out with a totally new rebranding, you know, messaging, but also the most incredible platform. And, you know, the question is here is really doing your homework as a fintech on the one side and really figuring out how to position yourself. I think as far as the corporate goes, they either know exactly what they need, or they think they do, and they need to have the right kind of advice and consultancy help to get where they're going. What do I mean? I'll take a cash example. A corporate may say, "I want pooling. I want cash pooling." But what they really mean is, "I want to improve my liquidity picture." And if your fintech is smart and agile and clever, they'll understand that the point here is improving liquidity. And there are many things that can be done to do that. There isn't a corporate out there that isn't looking to optimize liquidity. So that's one way to look at it, if you will.
I see, I see. And let's say we got it all figured out, because that already is a really tough step, even for people who worked in corporates before. Because what I've been a startup scout in the past, and what I've seen, they just sent me the usual pitch deck that is tailored to investors and it has awesome KPIs. Annual recurring revenue, monthly recurring revenue. And then I was going, huh, what is the important information for me here? So basically, you have to put yourself into the shoes of the corporate, which can be very hard, depending on how much you understand of them, and then
Yes.
think from their position.
Goes it If I could just add something there, it goes back to what we were talking about just before, is the language. So two things. As you very rightly say, you have to put yourself in the position of the treasurer, and frankly, unless you've worked with treasurers for some time, that might be a difficult one. I mean, I sold to treasurers for many years, so I understand the kind of questions, the kind of challenges. I know sort of a day in the life of the treasurer, what they're doing. That's absolutely key. On the other side, it's even if you understand all that, how do you do treasurer speak? So how do you actually talk to them? How do you position to them? And you also mentioned something about getting decks or paper. The question is also, are you using in the field sales? Are you using more of the marketing approach? What are you actually is it there's so many tools out there, and yet you have to really understand your audience, where they're looking, where they're buying, what they're reading. So that does make a huge difference as well in terms of positioning.
That makes sense. I would then go ahead and ask you, how would you help to think the CEO, the founder of a startup about questions if or if not he or she has figured it out? But by the way, we may add a treasurer is the person in charge in big corporates, that make sure they have the money, enough money, and also in the right currency. That can be quite tricky, if you're dealing like in 5 or 10 different currencies, 5 or 10 different time zones, 20 or 30 banks, and then you start to see the complexity in that. I'm not really envying those people. But what I was going at is, okay, let's say you have a list of corporates. You have a rough idea how you would fit in and how you would position yourself. But then the question is, whom should I talk to? Who is the right person to talk to? And how should I start to approach them? For me personally, it's pretty simple. I talk to startups. They usually approach me. Sometimes I approach them, and then usually directly the founder via LinkedIn. But I'm afraid if you want to work with companies like Bosch, Porsche, or Mercedes, it's not so easy to get accepted as a contact on LinkedIn by the CEO, right?
Absolutely. That's actually a brilliant question, because that's one of the things that I spend a lot of time talking to my startups about, is how to get how to how to get the first discussion going, how to really get in there, how to really talk about it. And yeah, I think that, they certainly work LinkedIn. That's one of them. But first trying to figure out who to talk to in an organization, which could be the treasurer, it could be the cash manager, it could be compliance, it could in fact be HR. It's very interesting. There's different pockets. It could be procurement. It really depends on obviously what you're selling. And even if I'm talking about a company like TIS that concentrates on payment optimization, it still looks at all those different areas. So there's a lot of social media work that can be done that makes it easier. That's how, I would suggest starting. But also, once you've done that, once you've got them on the phone or once you've got their ear for a moment, what do you start saying? What do you do? And positioning is absolutely crucial. As I said, you've got to really understand what their pain points are or try to get them out on the table very, very quickly. They have to feel that it's worth having that first discussion with you.
I was actually you already overtook me because the first
Sorry.
question was whom would I approach? How would I approach? And then the next question is how to get the first meeting. But basically, what I deduced from you was first step would be read their social media posts, their press releases, maybe even their annual
Absolutely.
reports. And
Absolutely.
What I found interesting was you always have different parts you could talk to depending on your product or your service. But what was always for me important, you have to make sure you talk to someone who has a budget for doing stuff like this. Because if you don't have a budget, you're just wasting your time. Ta-da!
Unfortunately, that's usually true. Without a budget, it makes it difficult. I was going to add one thing that I think is not that shouldn't be forgotten. We talked about sort of the cold call way of going at it. One thing that's absolutely important, one thing I do for my clients is if you have a lot of contacts, it makes a lot of difference. It's like everything else in life. If you have somebody give an introduction. Of course, in the end of the day, it's always key, is your product the right one? Is it going to work? Blah, blah, blah. But getting that first talk, getting that first interview, getting in the door with contacts makes all the difference. So that certainly is a big help. So having an advisor is often very helpful.
Also meaning contacts are gold, contacts are key. What I personally would be doing, I go through the social media content, look for the content that's relevant to me. Maybe there is a person who is mentioned there in the blog post or whatever it is they are sharing. Or maybe you can look for who else is sharing this blog post or stuff. Maybe it's the person in charge of XY at this company, and they're also sharing it on Twitter. That's a great contact, or LinkedIn. Of course, then you said connections. Connections are important there. If you know someone who knows someone, it's much, much easier than to just do a cold call and
The warm intro.
yeah. Exactly, and then assume you get to the first meeting. How would you advise to them to prepare, and how much can or should they tell? We don't do easy questions here.
All very, very good questions, and I'm working with a few fintechs on that. A few startups on that actually, exactly how do you position yourself? When do you do what? How soon do you do it? What kinds of questions? What are the best questions to ask? How industry specific do we have to get? And it really, I have to say, it really depends, dot, 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 because there's no, one size fits all is not going to work here. But having said that, doing your homework is absolutely key. Let's face it, everyone wants to feel like they're important. And if you know more about me before you talk with me, of course, I feel better about it. It's very key. On the other hand, you also want to listen. Listen, listen, listen. Very important. So if you ask the right open-ended questions to get certain information about where they're going, the projects, what's key to them, where the shoe is pinching, that's also very important. So it's a combination and it really depends. And you have to have a little I'm thinking of the German word. I'm trying to remember the English word as a Feingefühl. You really have to feel your way carefully through some of these situations to do it right. It's not a scheme that you can plot out in every case. You have to be ready for some dead ends and, repivots.
I'm just looking at the show notes I'll have here down in the blog post, and I'll explain PSD2, cash pooling treasurer, and Feingefühl. This is interview is going to be awesome.
One of the things I didn't mention when we started, I'm half German, half American. I have literally two passports, two citizenships, and I grew up with both languages. And I really get to the point where I sometimes have difficulty doing anything in just one. So this is one of those words.
And I've also seen not only do you have an MBA from Wharton, but you're also graduated with a degree in German literature. Who was
I
your
did.
favorite writer?
You're supposed to say Goethe now, right? I don't know. Fontana actually was one of my absolute favorites and did a lot of work on that.
I'm not too sure how I would mention, but I would totally not do Kafka. Kafka is always twisting my brain. We'll have some version of text of Kafka, and it's always like in a dream, reality is just moving. Oh,
Absolutely. No, Kafka was not. Although I had to read quite a bit, no, that was not my favorite writer.
I see. Okay. Below Feingefühl, there will be Kafka. Let's say we have this. We have the first meeting done, and then we have a few more meetings. How would you talk to a startup about signing a cooperation? I would personally say, talk to a third party. It doesn't have to be necessarily a lawyer because he will understand the law aspects of it, but not the business aspects. Talk to a friend who is also a founder. Talk to a third party who's somehow knowledgeable, and make sure you're not really disadvantaged there. Plus, what I always find important, many cooperation agreements I've seen, they're very awesome, exact down to the detail. And they don't say one word about how to get out of this contract. They have a notice period, and that's it. But then don't specify anything, how to get out of process or stuff like this. This is always important for me because when you don't end this cooperation on good terms, it may get ugly, it may get long, and you may even get into a legal fight. And that's something you really, really want to avoid as a startup. What do you advise?
All of the above sounds good to me. I think one thing that I also find is that many startups are so desperate to get into the game that they're willing to perhaps give too much away. That's something I would worry about or watch out for. It's not that you don't compromise. I think you can both sides can do that, and you have to, but you have to also know where the boundaries are. That's something I've seen a few times, and that would be a piece of advice I would really give. So that, and also understanding, where your partner is coming from. I think that's also very key. So I think between what you said and what I said, that's a you have a framework, and also the very obvious, talk to someone who's done it before. Try to get some advice. That I think is always key.
So now, as kind of a guideline, I've written down during we've been talking, what do corporates want? How does my startup fit in there? How do I get the right positioning? Whom to approach? How do I approach? How do I get in the first meeting? How do I tell? What do I tell in the first meeting? And get advice on the final agreement. As we said, of course, a lawyer is always good, but also make sure you get the business side and how to end the contract right.
Absolutely. And also get, as I said, I really do see some of the startups that are so anxious to get into business that they're willing to give away too much and they're not looking after their own interests. It is important.
Well, that's actually awesome closing words. We're recording now for 30 minutes already, which is a little bit longer on my regular episodes, but I do believe there are now a lot of questions from all the startups out there. And of course, you can reach Kate down here in the show notes. There's her LinkedIn profile as well as her company website. Kate, thank you very much. It was just a pleasure having you on my show. Hope to see you back and hope to that many, many entrepreneurs find it interesting and helpful what we've talked about.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure.
If you are a professional looking at the European startup scene, Germany is a place you cannot miss. Fortunately for you, there is startuprad.eu, the authority on German startups. This English-only podcast brings you fresh interviews each week. Most likely, you have never heard or read anything on these startups before in English, but you will in the future. Be ahead of the curve and subscribe to startuprad.eu podcast, or check for the startuprad.eu internet radio station. Check your Alexa for the startuprad.eu skill as well.